Chapter 72. Consciousness of comparative security became the more impressed upon them by daily experience. Added to these considerations, it must be remembered that the young man had spent some time in the public hospitals of the metropolis, and, although neither Burke nor Bishop had then gained a horrible notoriety, his own observation might have suggested to him how easily the atrocities to which the former has since given his name might be committed. Be this as it may, whatever reflection made him hesitate, he did hesitate. But, being a young man of strong mind and great personal courage, it was only for an instant. He stepped briskly back and knocked gently at the door. A low whispering was audible immediately afterwards, as if some person at the end of the passage were conversing stealthily with another on the landing above. It was succeeded by the noise of a pair of heavy boots upon the bare floor. The door chain was softly unfastened, the door opened, and a tall, ill-favored man, with black hair and a face, as the surgeon often declared afterwards, as pale and haggard as the countenance of any dead man he ever saw, presented himself. "Walk in, sir," he said in a low tone. The surgeon did so, and the man, having secured the door again by the chain, led the way to a small back parlor at the extremity of the passage. "Am I in time?" "Too soon." replied the man. The surgeon turned hastily round, with a gesture of astonishment not unmixed with alarm, which he found it impossible to repress. "If you will step in here, sir," said the man, who had evidently noticed the action, "if you will step in here, sir, you won't be detained 5 minutes, I assure you." The surgeon at once walked into the room. The man closed the door and left him alone. It was a little cold room, with no other furniture than 2 deal chairs, and a table of the same material. A handful of fire, unguarded by any fender, was burning in the grate, which brought out the damp, if it served no more comfortable purpose, for the unwholesome moisture was stealing down the walls, in long slug-like tracks. The window, which was broken and patched in many places, looked into a small enclosed piece of ground, almost covered with water. Not a sound was to be heard, either within the house or without. The young surgeon sat down by the fireplace to await the result of his first professional visit. He had not remained in this position many minutes when the noise of some approaching vehicle struck his ear. It stopped. The street door was opened. A low talking succeeded, accompanied with a shuffling noise of footsteps, along the passage and on the stairs, as if 2 or 3 men were engaged in carrying some heavy body to the room above. The creaking of the stairs, a few seconds afterwards, announced that the newcomers, having completed their task, whatever it was, were leaving the house. The door was again closed, and the former silence was restored. Another 5 minutes had elapsed, and the surgeon had resolved to explore the house in search of someone to whom he might make his errand known, when the room door opened, and his last night's visitor, dressed in exactly the same manner, with the veil lowered as before, motioned him to advance. The singular height of her form, coupled with the circumstance of her not speaking, caused the idea to pass across his brain for an instant that it might be a man disguised in woman's attire. The hysteric sobs which issued from beneath the veil, and the convulsive attitude of grief of the whole figure, however, at once exposed the absurdity of the suspicion, and he hastily followed. The woman led the way upstairs to the front room, and paused at the door to let him enter first. It was scantily furnished with an old deal box, a few chairs, and a tent bedstead, without hangings or cross rails, which was covered with a patchwork counterpane. The dim light admitted through the curtain which he had noticed from the outside rendered the objects in the room so indistinct, and communicated to all of them so uniform a hue, that he did not, at first, perceive the object on which his eye at once rested, when the woman rushed frantically past him, and flung herself on her knees by the bedside. Stretched upon the bed, closely enveloped in a linen wrapper and covered with blankets, lay a human form, stiff and motionless. The head and face, which were those of a man, were uncovered, save by a bandage which passed over the head and under the chin. The eyes were closed. The left arm lay heavily across the bed, and the woman held the passive hand. The surgeon gently pushed the woman aside, and took the hand in his. "My God!" ! He exclaimed, letting it fall involuntarily. "The man is dead." ! The woman started to her feet, and beat her hands together. "Oh! Don't say so, sir!" ! She exclaimed, with a burst of passion, amounting almost to frenzy. "Oh! Don't say so, sir! I can't bear it. Men have been brought to life before when unskillful people have given them up for lost, and men have died who might have been restored if proper means had been resorted to. Don't let him lie here, sir, without one effort to save him. This very moment life may be passing away. Do try, sir, do, for heaven's sake." And while speaking, she hurriedly chafed, first the forehead, and then the breast, of the senseless form before her, and then, wildly beat the cold hands, which, when she ceased to hold them, fell listlessly and heavily back on the coverlet. "It is of no use, my good woman," said the surgeon, soothingly, as he withdrew his hand from the man's breast. "Stay and draw that curtain." "Why?" said the woman, starting up. "Undraw that curtain." Repeated the surgeon in an agitated tone. "I darkened the room on purpose," said the woman, throwing herself before him as he rose to undraw it. "Oh, sir, have pity on me. If it can be of no use, and he is really dead, do not expose that form to other eyes than mine." "This man died no natural or easy death," said the surgeon. "I must see the body." With a motion so sudden that the woman hardly knew that he had slipped from beside her, he tore open the curtain, admitted the full light of day, and returned to the bedside. "There has been violence here," he said, pointing towards the body, and gazing intently on the face, from which the black veil was now, for the first time, removed. In the excitement of a minute before, the female had thrown off the bonnet and veil, and now stood with her eyes fixed upon him. Her features were those of a woman about 50, who had once been handsome. Sorrow and weeping had left traces upon them, which not time itself would ever have produced without their aid. Her face was deadly pale, and there was a nervous contortion of the lip, and an unnatural fire in her eye, which showed too plainly that her bodily and mental powers had nearly sunk beneath an accumulation of misery. "There has been violence here," said the surgeon, preserving his searching glance. "There has," replied the woman. "This man has been murdered. That I call God to witness he has," said the woman, passionately, pitilessly, inhumanly murdered. "By whom?" said the surgeon, seizing the woman by the arm. "Look at the butcher's marks, and then ask me." She replied. The surgeon turned his face towards the bed, and bent over the body which now lay full in the light of the window. The throat was swollen, and a livid mark encircled it. The truth flashed suddenly upon him. "This is one of the men who were hanged this morning." He exclaimed, turning away with a shudder. "It is," replied the woman, with a cold, unmeaning stare. "Who was he?" inquired the surgeon. "My son," rejoined the woman, and fell senseless at his feet. It was true. A companion, equally guilty with himself, had been acquitted for want of evidence, and this man had been left for death and executed. To recount the circumstances of the case at this distant period must be unnecessary and might give pain to some person still alive. The history was an everyday one. The mother was a widow without friends or money, and had denied herself necessaries to bestow them on her orphan boy. That boy, unmindful of her prayers, and forgetful of the sufferings she had endured for him, incessant anxiety of mind, and voluntary starvation of body, had plunged into a career of dissipation and crime. And this was the result: his own death by the hangman's hands, and his mother's shame, and incurable insanity. For many years after this occurrence, and when profitable and arduous avocations would have led many men to forget that such a miserable being existed, the young surgeon was a daily visitor at the side of the harmless mad woman, not only soothing her by his presence and kindness, but alleviating the rigor of her condition by pecuniary donations for her comfort and support, bestowed with no sparing hand. In the transient gleam of recollection and consciousness which preceded her death, a prayer for his welfare and protection, as fervent as mortal ever breathed, rose from the lips of this poor friendless creature. That prayer flew to heaven, and was heard. The blessings he was instrumental in conferring have been repaid to him a thousandfold. But, amid all the honors of rank and station which have since been heaped upon him, and which he has so well earned, he can have no reminiscence more gratifying to his heart than that connected with the Black Veil. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.